Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
People Fixing the World is the podcast looking for solutions to the problems we face today.
It could potentially ease the suffering of millions.
We have a solution. Let's do it.
People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Manuela Zaragoza. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Coming up, do you trust the food on your plate?
To hear that it's been contaminated or it's not the animal you think you're eating at all, it's a little scary.
Incidents of food fraud globally are on the rise. Could technology usually associated with Bitcoin help stop that?
You can get useful information, but you cannot guarantee that the information is accurate or correct all the time.
That's all here in Business Daily from the BBC. This week, authorities in Spain are reported to have seized hundreds of tons of jamón, a type of Spanish cured ham, and other meat products that were beyond their sell-by date. Companies were apparently tampering with seals and labels to extend the shelf life of these expired products and planning to sell them back onto the market. It's just another example of food fraud that's costing the industry tens of billions of dollars globally a year. And that at a time when the incidence of food fraud is on the rise around the world. We'll come to that in just a moment. First, though, to Kolkata in India. A pretty horrific food scandal there is putting people off their usual mutton biryanis and chicken rolls. Raul Tandon sent this report.
On the show tonight, to deny a Bengali meat in his or her cuisine is quite unthinkable. Now, sales are evaporating after news broke of a disgusting scam.
Kolkata is a city where people love to talk about food. And over the past few months on busy streets like this, it's been dominating conversations. That is after the police revealed that a gang had been taking dead animals like cats and dogs from rubbish dumps and selling it to restaurants and meat shops in the city. Indrajit Lahiri is Kolkata's most famous food blogger.
It has affected hundreds of thousands of small business houses. The biryani shop owners, the roll owners, they took a massive, massive hit. The business fell down, let's say, to 30% of the regular business ventures. I know a couple of places that are shut down for a couple of months.
To get a sense of how bad the situation is, I've come to one of Kolkata's oldest meat markets. Here you can pick up your chicken, your mutton or your goat. But there's not many customers here at the moment. And at his small chicken shop, Abdul tells me it's been like that for some time.
Business is really bad. It's down by more than 50%. People are eating less meat. Some have stopped completely. If this continues, I will have to shut down this shop. I will not be able to survive.
Madam, aapko chicken roll or veg roll lena?
Humko veg roll chahiye, please.
Okay, ma'am.
I've left the meat market and I've come to one of Kolkata's famous roll shops. Here you'll normally find people tucking into their mutton or chicken egg rolls, but now it's the vegetarian ones that are the best sellers. People no longer have faith in the meat that restaurants are serving. Amongst the customers here is Anisha Agarwala.
I'm a big meat eater, so I would always order meat, but now I've really cut it down. Like, one of my favorite dishes is chili pork, and I used to get it at this restaurant in Calcutta. But when I go there now, I don't get it anymore because I'm not sure where the meats come from at all. I'd probably go for a veg dish or something.
So a lot of businesses have been badly affected by the meat scandal that has hit one of the world's largest cities. Let's go and speak to the man who's trying to help businesses get through this difficult time. Sudesh Poddar is the president of the hotel and restaurants industry of Eastern India.
We told them that no need for the government to come and check your quality. You proactively go to private labs. There are very good labs in the country. And get your chicken, mutton, poultry, red meat, whatever, checked from them. And proudly and boldly put up a certificate in prominent place in the restaurant that, yes, this is the quality we are serving. And if you want, you can go and check our kitchen, see the stuff that you are having. Be confident.
Welcome to the Blue Poppy Thakali.
I've come to one of this city's most popular restaurants. It's famous for its momos, a speciality from the northeastern part of this country, which are made of chicken or pork. Doma Wong owns the Blue Poppy. She says whilst the meat scandal is a wake-up call for restaurants and how they source their food, it's also one for customers.
It's a lesson for the consumers now to know that if you want a biryani or a momo, a plate of momo for 25, 30, 40 rupees, it's, humanly not possible to give that kind of a product for the price you're paying.
Because how much should it cost?
A plate of chicken momos should not sell for less than 90 to 100 rupees. If it's cheaper, then I think there's reason to doubt.
Kolkata is a city that is full of foodies. The problem is, at the moment, they're only talking about vegetarian dishes because the meat ones are off the menu.
Raul Tandon reporting. That food fraud scandal in India is a reminder of how easy it is to break the bond of trust between the consumer and food manufacturer. It's not just in India either. There have been many food scandals in China over the past decade, from melamine-laced baby formula to rat meat dressed as lamb. And in 2013, European consumers were shocked to find many of them had been tucking into horse meat sold and packaged as beef.
The number of products affected continues to rise.
There's growing concern that the horse meat scandal is damaging to even our best farm businesses.
Well, the key issue is that the supply chain has become far too complex. You know, the retailer or the manufacturer doesn't know where the product's coming from because it's, you know, there's too many people in the way.
A lot of people no longer choosing processed food, avoiding the packaged meals, the ready meals, and switching to vegetarian options.
In the aftermath of that scandal, people in the food business started to look for ways to restore trust, which is where blockchain technology comes in. Now, blockchain isn't something you automatically associate with food. Think blockchain and you think of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Not to mention a fiendishly difficult to understand technological concept. So here's a quick and simple reminder of what blockchain is, courtesy of a previous edition of Business Daily featuring David Schreier of Oxford Said Business School.
Let's think about how a bank works. So a bank is essentially a giant ledger book. You go to the bank and make a deposit, they write an entry in the ledger. You take a withdrawal out, they write another entry in the ledger. What that means is that there's a single point of failure. So in today's electronic era, if someone wants to steal money from a bank, all they need to do is change that one entry in the ledger book. With blockchain, there are thousands of copies of this ledger, and they all talk to each other, which means they're much more resilient. You'd have to change thousands of copies of the ledger book to steal money from the bank.
Imagine then applying that ledger-based blockchain technology to the food supply chain. Well, here's someone who's doing just that.
So I'm Jessie Baker, and I'm the founder and CEO of Provenant. Provenant is a platform for businesses that want to make their supply chains more transparent.
Provenant is running several pilot projects around the world, including tracking fish caught in Cornwall in the UK and Indonesia and Greece from the moment it gets hauled from the sea right to the point of retail, all using blockchain technology.
We've put several products on the blockchain.
And you're doing this, yeah, as you said, using blockchain technology. What I don't understand is with, for example, if you have a diamond and you're looking at the provenance of a diamond, there's a way of doing it where there are markings. Obviously, that is not possible with food. So how does this work?
So this is tricky. Understanding blockchain tech is hard because it's a database, which isn't something we think about that often. So you can connect the digital and the physical world using either natural markers. So all types of food have a unique genetic fingerprint that can be read from anything from some meat to some corn. And that can be imprinted as a marker in the blockchain if you really want to get a kind of a mutable digital physical link and then a passport that can cascade digitally with that physical product end to end. But actually, we found a huge amount of fraud can be cut in the system even without linking digital and physical, because what blockchain technology does so well is eliminate the copy-paste problem, in that it's relatively easy to duplicate a certificate of authenticity relating to an attribute of food today. But with a blockchain, you can link that attribute to a verified quantity and then exchange that down the chain peer-to-peer without being able to duplicate the quantity. So you drastically eliminate the incentive for fraud or even the ability to be able to sell something fraudulent by eliminating the ability to duplicate the record of verification of a claim.
So from a consumer's point of view, if you have this blockchain technology backing up the food that, for example, me or you might buy in a supermarket, how does it work? What do we see?
What we see isn't necessarily to do with blockchain. It depends how you expose the data. So at Provenance, we expose the data that we gather through a blockchain as a bit like a timeline for the food. And so you can look back at the exact provenance of where your food comes from. But most people don't want to dig into that detail. You have to be fairly geeky to want to do that. So the majority of the things we do is summarize kind of that high-level journey and show customers the key verified claims that have been tracked through the supply chain.
Can you give me an example? For example, you said you'd had a project with fish from Cornwall and also I think from the skipjack tuna from Indonesia.
Yeah, so for both of those projects we actually did the whole thing end to end. So we started with the individual fishermen at the beginning of the journey, and actually in both cases the fishermen were recording their catch quantities daily, both for reports to local authorities and also for this, their own accounting. So we took those catch records and digitized them, and essentially that's the beginning of the record of the fish in the blockchain. We can then link to those fish some of the key claims that we can also verify. So things like the location of the fishermen, where you can use their mobile phone to tell exactly where they are, or even connect into other data systems like such as GPS trackers on boats to be able to have proof of origin of the fish. So we did that. We linked the proof of origin to a quantity of fish and also several other audited claims about the fish. And then essentially what you've got is a digital version of the fish that's sitting inside a blockchain, and people can essentially, when you buy the fish, you can also transfer the digital version of the fish when you transfer the physical version and create a kind of digital handshake that says, yes, you bought that fish for me. And off you go down the chain, and the blockchain just preserves the record, meaning no one can edit it or duplicate it, so that that fish and its key claims and its time of catch and how much was caught are preserved through the supply chain.
You have the traceability, but then you still have to trust the people who are inputting the data into the blockchain, don't you? Is that a weakness?
It is in the short term, for sure. Blockchains aren't intelligent. Blockchains don't know if something's organic or not. They can just store that information in a very secure format and prevent it from being duplicated down the supply chain. But what's really interesting is blockchains can become a great place to triangulate data, so match different data sets together to get some veracity of information. But also, they're a great conduit for reputation systems. And I think we've already seen the rise of reputation systems to date, like we get in a stranger's car because of someone's Uber rating. We stay in a stranger's apartment because of their Airbnb rating. So reputation systems are definitely powering a new way of purchasing things. And blockchains are a fantastic kind of next step for reputation systems.
Jessie Baker, founder and CEO of Provenance, speaking to me here on Business Daily from the BBC. So what kind of food supply chains would this technology be good for? Chris Elliott is a professor of food safety at the Institute for Global Food Security at Queen's University in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Blockchain has been discussed at quite a lot of length over the last number of years, and it does seem now to be, many people are thinking it is the saviour of the global food supply system in terms of we can track and trace everything. I'm just not as confident as that. I've been involved in a number of blockchain projects. You can get useful information, but you cannot guarantee that the information is accurate or correct all the time.
And that's because at the end of the day, you still have to trust the people who are inputting the data.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You know, you manually input data into a digital system and that gets digitally recorded. And wherever you are in the world and you have access to the blockchain, you can find out that information relatively quickly. It's just you cannot guarantee that it's true.
But I suppose in many ways, it's better than nothing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to seem very negative about blockchain. I think it is a very interesting tool, but I think it has to be combined with a number of other technologies that will actually verify the validity of the information being put into the system before we can really rely on it totally.
So what kind of technologies might those be?
One of the projects that we're working on at the moment is we actually do a fingerprint scan of the foodstuffs. So we do a fingerprint, that information gets put onto the digital platform as well.
And when you say fingerprint, what do you mean?
It's basically a molecular fingerprint. We scan the foodstuffs with a little scanner, a little handheld scanner that produces a digital signature of the food, all of all the molecules that are present in the food, and it becomes unique for the foodstuff. That information then can also get stored onto the digital platform itself. And the next time that foodstuff is stored, maybe are checked somewhere else during the supply chain, that digital signature should be an absolute match. That's why we call it food fingerprinting.
And had these kind of systems been in place at the time of, for example, the horse meat scandal in Europe, would it have stopped the horse meat scandal?
I think if you have a very good system, a track and trace system in place, it makes it much, much more difficult for people to cheat. Does it mean it's impossible to cheat? I very much doubt that, because wherever people can make money, you'll find a way to get around systems. The tighter the systems are, the more difficult it is to penetrate them.
Because globally, food fraud is on the rise, isn't it?
Certainly the number of cases of food fraud being reported is escalating. You know, on a weekly basis, we now pick up huge numbers of incidents happening around the world. But also we've got to remember is people are more conscious, more aware that it's happening. So there's more investigations going on. And as I say, often whenever you look for a problem, you will find it.
And the figure that's often bandied around is that food fraud is costing the global food industry something between $30 and $40 billion a year. But how do we get to that number? And what does that number actually mean? Where is that coming from?
The $40 billion is probably the one most frequently quoted that came from a PwC report. But when I kind of looked into that myself, I think it was more of an estimate. It's really very difficult to estimate the amount of criminal activity in our global food supply system. All I can say is it happens at a very, very large level in many parts of the world. So that estimate, I would probably say, is quite conservative.
So do you think that blockchain will ever go mainstream when it comes to the food supply? I mean, even despite those reservations that you have, do you still think it could be, eventually it will become standard to apply it in commercial settings?
And I think the answer is yes. I mean, you know, blockchain is a technology that is here. It's going to get better. It's going to get more established.
Chris Elliott at the Institute for Global Food Security at Queen's University in Belfast on food fraud and how a helping of blockchain might help improve just a bit the quality and flavour of what ends up on our plates. That's it from this Business Daily. If you missed a previous edition, just head to your usual podcast downloading website. In the meantime, we're back again at the same time tomorrow.
People Fixing the World is the podcast looking for solutions to the problems we face today.
It could potentially ease the suffering of millions.
We meet people with smart ideas to discover how they might change the world for the better.
And this is a fairly cheap and easy way to get lots more solar capacity into the middle of cities.
People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service.
We have a solution. Let's do it.
Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.